This winter and spring, I want to lead a 7-part sermon series on the UU principles. Inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, one after another, starting on February 9th. But between now and then, I have a few other things that are attracting my attention. This next week, an intergenerational service around Martin Luther King. On the 26th, radical hospitality, which we're going to talk about. I don't know. Have you ever heard of the Seattle Freeze? Have you ever experienced it? Okay, because I'm a minister. You get invited into a church, you figure you got a community right there. And I've experienced too. So we can all be friendlier. And we're going to have a demonstration, analysis, and cheerleading event on Sunday in 2 weeks, and you better come. The next week, longings of the heart, queries of the mind, and on Groundhog Day. And what I'm trying to do there, what I want to try to do is center these 7 principles in a fundamental question. How can these principles help us? How can adherence to or familiarity with and a regular turning them into touchstones in our lives, how can that help us lead better, happier, more productive lives? I mean, can they? Should they? And how do they help the church fulfill its mission? If everybody's really trying to use the principles as touchstones of value that they can kind of monitor their own behavior. Will that make the church a better place? Will we be kinder to each other? Will we be more efficient and creative in fulfilling our mission? That'll be on February 2nd. And then this principles series, which begins on the 9th, and I want to propose that we consider each principle in turn as a spiritual practice, but more on that in 4 weeks. Now, today, we've already heard from Barb about Khasi Hills, reminding us of the important work going on in our partner church in India, and inviting everyone here this morning who wants to further those efforts to give generously when the collection plate comes around in a few minutes. These Khasi Hills people are fellow Unitarians living in the northeast section, kind of corner of India, above Bangladesh, as it was explained. And they have a community there where they do just the same kind of things we do, where they help their members with the vicissitudes of daily life and keeping your chins up, as my grandmother used to say, and shoulder to the wheel, nose to the grindstone, all that, but with this element of good cheer and hopefulness. But the situation in Khasi Hills involves daily uncertainties and privations unknown to most North American UUs. Studying and visiting these far-flung Unitarian Universalist communities has been, for many people, as Barb testified, and as John, you've probably heard John, and I've talked to Doug Strombaugh, as these people have said, their experience in the Khasi Hills has been life-changing. Now, Unitarianism and Universalism only merged in 1961, but both movements were pretty parochial in their 19th and early 20th century years. In fact, all the denominations were that way, and if you look, they keep splintering and becoming smaller with doctrinal refinements across the world. And it was only in about 1890 that this kind of centrifugal force, counter-centrifugal force to the centripetal force, entered the picture with the ecumenical movement, the YMCA, the YWCA. Those are in the late 19th century. So, now there were English Unitarians, it's true, but they're among the most clipped and frosty people on earth. And there were Unitarians pretty seriously in Poland following the Reformation, but then 350 years ago, the counter-reformational zealots wiped them out. But of all places on earth, in Transylvania, the oldest churches are not quite 500 years old. And there are quite a few of them. There's, you know, a few dozen. And now from 1947 through 1990, Transylvania was part of, it's an odd little place in the world, kind of carved on three sides by the Carpathian Mountains. And it's been in Hungary and it's been in what we call today Romania, but it's been in Romania through most of the 20th century. And from 1947 to 1990, that country was under a communist regime, the last 25 years of which were led by the ruthless dictator Nicolae Ceausescu. The state, being communist, was officially atheist, so there were, the churches were not quite outlawed, but not appreciated. Beneath the radar, however, Greek Orthodox, Roman Catholic, Lutheran, and Unitarian groups continued to operate, despite considerable oppression from the state and no money. In 1990, like when I went to Cuba, they really don't have money. They didn't have money much in Romania in those years. In 1990, though, after the Berlin Wall and the Eastern European puppet states of the Soviet Union were beginning to crumble, and suddenly, overnight, Ceausescu and that whole regime collapsed. Now, Leon Hopper, Peter Rabel over in Seattle, and a couple of other Unitarian ministers who were of recognized authority denominationally had been watching Ceausescu. He was thinking... They had a plan underfoot to raise many of those villages and build these, you know, very ugly square apartment buildings to replace them. And we and Leon and others were concerned about it. Anyway, then all of a sudden, Ceausescu is a murdered. I mean, he was summarily tried and executed. This was in 1990, and Leon had been here 10 years, and his ministry was thriving. And he and Peter and a few others just jumped at the chance to go to Transylvania, and they went to Torosko, San George, over there, and they began opening up communication channels with the... There are a lot of people in Transylvania, and they're not all Count Dracula lookalikes either. So Leon and his cohort soon were organizing Transylvanian trips for UUs from here and from Kirkland and University Unitarian and the West Side churches. And then the next thing you know, from all over the country. Soon Leon and his wife Dorothy forged a good relationship with the minister from Josico. Say it again. Torosko. You could stand right here. Torosko, St. George. And that minister, Emis Finta, and her husband, Kasaba. Once North Americans started visiting over there, they were easily and comfortably drawn into the village life of their UU Transylvanian cohort. In his organizing efforts, Reverend Hopper smuggled, get this, more than $30,000 to help the ministers and families of the Transylvanian UU community, including many thousands of dollars to a family who had a kid who had a benign but disfiguring brain tumor. And they took many thousands of dollars to help that family. Now, in the 30 years since Leon's bold ministry of international partnership began, dozens of East Shore people and hundreds from beyond East Shore have been transformed by the experience of these partner churches. Now, they may not have all had their heads operated on, but they all had their minds blown and creatively transformed. Barbara and John have testified. I spoke with ESUC board member Paul Burens last week about his experiences journeying to Transylvania, and he repeated the same, that it deepened his faith in many ways. At first, reported Paul, I saw how completely different these rural Eastern Europeans were from all the UUs I'd ever known. But by the end of my pilgrimage among them, I could only see all that we had in common. And this is the great benefit of getting out of town, of going somewhere new, of seeing the world from a completely different perspective. As Rudyard Kipling once wryly observed, what do they know of England who only England know? What does anyone know about a place who has never been anywhere else? And what do humanistic West Coast UUs know about progressive UUs whose path to our faith is far different from their own, far different as it formed and reformed in reaction to Catholicism and state communism in Transylvania, and out of Hinduism and Aboriginal animism in the Khasi Hills. I can hear Leon Hopper now asking us, what do they know of Unitarian Universalism who know only of the West Coast humanistic variety? There's a lot going on in the world. Much of it is dangerous, scary, and downright deplorable. It's depressing. In fact, it goes without saying, though it's not often said, that a person has good reason to be depressed nowadays. As Bob Dylan wrote decades ago, it's easy to see without looking too far, not much is really sacred. No, it's not. And those of us who are committed to the sacred and holding up a better, more wholesome, cooperative way of being, pointing our way toward that way of life and struggling day after day to pull it off, those of us engaged in that can indeed do get weary and forlorn. The Partnership Church Council is a good antidote to such feelings. The relationships forged in the early 1990s helped Transylvanian UUs negotiate the uncertain steps, first steps, out of despotic communism. Could it now be that they can help North Americans come to terms with state surveillance, political propaganda, and over-the-top head of state braggadocio? Perhaps. And definitely worth a try. The UU Partner Church is designed to help us transcend parochialism and become more truly universalist in our faith. UUs in Khasi Hills, Transylvania, and we also have partner churches in the Philippines and Kenya. And beyond, all of these people live simple, wholesome, striving lives in accordance with the same seven principles and six sources that are central to our religion. It's the same religion. We can only learn and grow from more interaction and communication together with these people. So may it be. Amen.